This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast. You are turned and quit of music, news, and criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica.
Road dogs are built for sleeping in. I've been up since 4 a.m. At your worst, you're better than my better days. There ain't been no sun in L.A. since you moved out of Sarah's place.
The boys of faith are in the building today. When I tell you the boys of faith are here, we have gathered here today to discuss the art form, the artwork, the ode to Zach Bryan. A lot of Zach Bryan business to attend to. You know, we had to get the team together. First of all, it's Elamine Abdelmahmoud. Elamine, a culture writer, podcaster, host of CBC's Commotion, big podcast head.
Bruh, what's up? What's good? I'm so excited about this. Let's go.
What a joy.
What a joy.
Also, Tom Bryan, senior writer at Stereo Gum. Tom B.
No relation.
No relation. True. Are you sure? Have you done the family tree?
If his ancestors were smart enough to change their spelling at Ellis Island or whatever, then I salute them. They did a good job.
Tom, first of all, I had the God's Hate hoodie on and then swapped it out for the Gulch t-shirt. I appreciate everybody dressing. Elamine's got the Tyler t-shirt. I got the Gary Allen shirt. Everybody did their interpretive fashion for this episode. So Zach Bryan has a newish album, self-titled, and then an EP just dumped right atop that called Boys of Faith. Let's maybe start with the EP. We'll work our way backwards. Elamine, you texted me some bars about this EP. What were you calling this EP and why?
I was excited to talk about it because I was like, this is white excellence. That's what this is. We have gathered Noah, we have gathered Justin Vernon, and we've gathered Zach Bryan, and together, like, these are, I have to imagine there's some young white teenagers for whom this is like the Avengers, like that scene in the Avengers when they all come through the portals. Like, that's gotta be what this is. I mean, these are forces gathered.
Also, three very different haircuts, if we're keeping it honest. Like, that's real. Like, really, obviously, it's three different voices. It's three.
Does Justin Vernon have a haircut? What would you define that as?
That's true. That is one of the haircuts is no haircut.
But also, like, this was inevitable, right? Like, this is the thing that Zach Bryan has kind of been hinting at for a long time. He talked to you when you profiled him, what, a million years ago?
At this point, it feels like seven albums ago.
Exactly. About Bon Iver being one of his touch points. Yep. Even when you like listen to the, I know we're not going to talk about it yet, but the self-titled album, like that is For Emma, Forever Go Ass album. Like the touchstones are completely there. And so the idea that Bon Iver manifests himself, presumably out of thin air, comes out of the woods in order to do this. We're like, yeah, this checks out. We've arrived at the singularity of white excellence. It's good.
Tom, one of the things that I've sort of found most charming about Zach Bryan in conversation and also in disposition was this idea of like, I don't need nobody. I don't need this. I don't need you. I don't even need you, like you with the tape recorder. I don't need you. I don't need the label. I don't need any of this. And yet what we have 12 to 18 months later, I want to say a coalition of the reluctant, shall we say. We have this number one hit with Kacey Musgraves, who is a bit of a dissident in her own way. You have Bon Iver, Delamine's Point, who like has been, I don't know, like buried in the brush for quite some time.
Yeah, he never shows up on anybody's record. It's so hard to get him to come out and do something.
Aaron Dessner let him out the cage. First of all, if Zach Bryan starts really working with Aaron Dessner, bro, don't do it. Don't do it. Please don't do it. If one of us goes in, we all go through it. I just want to be very clear about that. And then Noah Kahn, who like obviously not that hard to find, but there is this sense of identifying the people who are adjacent to centrist roots or Americana or country and being like, ah, we can form this kind of like band of not so merry outsiders. Tom, what do you make of the positionality here?
I think one of the cool things about watching Zach Bryan at this point in his career is he seems to be slowly waking up to the fact that he's famous now. Like it's like a drip by drip. Like he's like, wait a minute. Like I can holler at Kacey Musgraves and she'll sing a song on my album. Like I can be an honorary lumineer, which I wish he wouldn't do. That's not what I'm looking for from him, but one of the things about Zach Bryan is he's not going to be what people are necessarily looking for from him, but he, you know, he's got his tastes and it doesn't like you could go make a checklist for obvious collaborators for him. And it would look like the most NPR thing that anybody has ever done. And I think part of him, part of what he wants to do is he's got that checklist for himself, but it also, it seems to be driven by personal taste. And his taste is, especially for like a star at his level right now, like pretty idiosyncratic. Like it's pretty much like, he's like a dude who's been online and been in the Navy or whatever. And this is like what he listens to. And that's who he wants to work with. And it doesn't seem to be market driven necessarily. And it'll like, Kacey Musgraves would have never, ever, ever had a number one hit on her own. And the fact that like Zach Bryan can just like scoop her up into the spotlight like that, like that's, I think he realizes that he can do that. And I think now everybody else also realizes that he can do that.
Okay. This is a non-judgmental, there's no value judgment in this question. You mentioned Zach Bryan's fame. How famous is Zach Bryan right now? And not that fame is like an important metric of anything, but like I do, especially in this like sort of atomized pop music environment where like you can have a number one album when 99.9% of the country has no idea who you are. How famous is Zach Bryan at this moment?
I think it's kind of a geographic thing. I live in Central Virginia. Here, Zach Bryan is fucking Elvis. Sorry for cussing. He's the man.
That's how famous here. He is. He's making you curse.
Like his arena show here sold out to the point where people needed like lottery tickets to get in. And he has since then, like since like 3 months ago, leveled up to the point where he's like doing two nights at Lincoln Financial Field where I saw Taylor Swift. Like, and he'll probably sell that. Like he is among people who like his kind of music, extraordinarily famous among the general public. I have no idea. I don't know how famous anyone is anymore.
For context, I live in Canada. We are nowhere near where that is. And also he sold out two nights here at one of the big arenas. And if you add those up, he could have played our largest stadium, which is the Rogers Center, where the Blue Jays play. And I think he would have actually sold that out quite successfully. I tried to get tickets to those two nights that where he's playing in that arena. No luck, because again, that lottery system and a lot of people are being locked out. So it's one of those things where everyone's listening. It feels like everyone's listening to Zach Bryan, but no one's talking about him as though everyone's listening to him. I love that. I love that mismatch because I think there's an energy of like, he's not trying to manage his fame specifically. I think if he was specifically in the business of managing that fame, there are certain steps that you take. Like you do this and then you do this and then you do this. And then suddenly you're kind of everywhere. He does not appear to be playing that game. And I think that's the thing that is drawing a lot of people to him is that this kind of feels organic. Some of these songs feel like they were written 2 minutes ago. And it's like, all right, I got another one for you. It's Epic Kitchen. Here we go. And in a universe where everything kind of feels like kind of dictated from above for you, I think the large part of the attraction to Zach Bryan is that exact energy of like, oh, he's like, he just wrote the song for me personally, except it's like you and an arena of people.
Yeah. Like at the beginning of the episode, we were listening to Sarah's Place. This is the song with Noah Kahan. And I think to that point, I remember him posting on his Instagram story a photo of Noah Kahan in the studio, maybe two photos over a couple of days, and thinking like, oh, okay, you know, Noah Kahan's kind of having a moment, you know, stick season, stick talk or whatever it's called.
Stick season.
Great. Sounds great. But it's also, to your point, it feels like it's like they posted the photo on like a Wednesday and then the thing came out on Friday. I know it wasn't that fast, but it felt that fast. The other thing that I feel like historically I have tried to, in my coverage, broadly speaking, be mindful of is like there are numerous ways to be successful and famous outside of what I think of as like the media echo chamber. And again, not to get all like Joe Rogan about it, but like, you know, there's like certain labels, certain bands, certain publicists, certain marketing companies, certain touring companies, certain touring venues where people who write about music professionally tend to gravitate towards. It's like it's sort of a self-reinforcing circle. Obviously, one of the things that was like most appealing to me besides the music about Zach Bryan when I first encountered it was I was like, none of those people know who this is. This is right. A person who's selling out 5,000 to 10,000 people venues multiple nights in a row. This is last year. And literally no one I know knows who this is, like at all. And that's intriguing. It's like, I don't know. Insane Clown Posse, you know, not to be like it's the same thing, but like you want to learn about who is occupying these spaces on the nights where like the obvious people, like venue wise, where the obvious people are not. And Zach Bryan somehow managed to find legions, especially young men, young white men who wanted to be there screaming the songs. And what was really encouraging to me is like, I tend to think of like, who's seeking out music online? Like who wants to find music that's like nonlinear online? It's like, obviously it's young people. It's people who are not being served by mainstream radio, whether it's pop or hip hop or whatever. This just let me know that like, frankly, bros too are seeking stuff out, that they are looking there. They want something that's not being offered as well.
There's a feeling to Zach Bryan and the whole Zach Bryan aura of insurgency. It sort of feels like, you know what, we kicked in the doors with this one and we're going to sort of align ourselves with this guy. You know, it's much less about musical genre as it is about a philosophy, sort of a, not even like an artistic set of values of like, hey, this feels really close. This feels like it has not been worked over too much. This feels like very, I mean, we throw around the word authentic a lot, but I think with Zach Bryan, there is just the feeling of authenticity. Like this feels like you have proximity to him in ways that, you know, you don't have to engage with the machinery of fame that you otherwise engage with in order to have access to this person.
To the point where people were upset when he didn't like kick out the cop car's window and brag about it.
Oh, we gonna talk about the arrest. Like the arrest is there. We'll get there. But like I do think that there is also part of the nature of his fame is this kind of anti-striver aspect to how he presents himself. I feel like even the most kind of like reluctant pop stars, like Doja Cat has a record out this week. Doja Cat is kind of always being like, don't put me on a pedestal. Like, I'm not the person you think I am. Like, I'm going to do this on my own terms. Still has worked with Dr. Luke, still making like songs that are not like foreign to radio formats. Like, there is something almost apologetic in the presentation of Zach Bryan. It's kind of like, I'm so sorry to trouble you. Like, I have just been on an artistic quest, and like, if you would humbly accept that I have released these songs into the world, it would do me an honor. You'd be doing me an honor if you listen to them. However, I do not expect, nor do I feel like I deserve your attention. I feel like that could be just like in a text thing, like on the cover of like every Zach Bryan release. And I do think it draws, there's something about that where he's not coming to you. He's not imposing himself on you. He's sort of presenting and in so doing is like lightly, you're pulling slightly, tempting you to come to him.
On the tour, the recent tour that he was on, he plays in the round in arenas. The way I saw it is he's got mics set up at four points on the stage, and it's almost like he's breaking up the arena into four discrete venues so he can sing to every one of these crowds and treat it like it's a smaller crowd. He also enters and leaves through the crowd. Like, I guess Drake does like the same thing on the tour he just did.
Like Drake.
But like, I heard you talking about the Drake show, and it was like he enters the crowd like a boxer, like walking through the crowd. And it is, that is not the vibe with Zach Bryan at all.
I actually did not catch this tour. So explain how it's different.
It's him and his band kind of like running joyfully through the crowd, like running out before the encore and then running back for the encore. And if there's security around them, there probably was. The security is like trying to stay out of the way and like not be part of the show. It all seems as homespun as a thing on that level can seem. And I, you know, by design, I think partly like they have a lighting guy on the payroll, you know, and they've got screens, they've got all the professional touches that you need to put on an arena show, but they make it seem as little like an arena show as they possibly can, which is going to be fascinating to see that on a stadium level, like how he does that.
The thing that sort of speaks a little bit to that ethos of humility is also just the sheer volume of music that this guy's put out. I mean, like, there's something to be said about like releasing something and then letting it do work out in the world. And he seems to refuse to do that, right? Like, a guy drops a triple LP, and then a month later comes back with Summertime Blues, which was an EP, like, that was last year. And then drops this album, and not even a month later, he's back with another EP. We're talking about...
He's a rapper.
He's a rapper. This is what we do. This is what you do when you're a rapper. Like, you are trying to basically flood the zone with a lot of new content. You're not specifically trying to assume that each individual piece of content is going to do the thing that you think it's going to do. And honestly, it just kind of feels like, I just want to share this with you. I'm so honored to share this with you. And let me just like go back into my writing cave. And I'm sure by the time that this tour launches, which I think is like in February, the next tour, he may have released like three more EPs. We don't even know.
There could be so many more albums by the time that happens.
Yeah.
The thing about that I'm most struck by is, and again, I this is going to sound pejorative, but I don't mean it that way. I don't feel like there's quality control on this stuff. And I don't mean that, again, in like, I think it's bad, but I think it's more like the purity of the release trumps the perfection of the release. And it's like, what if we just shared everything? What if we just put it out? Hey, you know what? We had a great day in the studio, me and Justin and Vernon. What if we just put that out? And if people mess with it, they mess with it. And if they don't, hey, we have a lovely document of a beautiful day together. To me, that is a very striking and welcome way to think about music releases. I feel like, think about people, you know, your Adele's of the world, you know, like people who are like, I need 5 years. Yeah, I need like 5 years to get everything perfect. And then still brick. And then still brick.
But his constant, like his fire hose always being on, like that's still monetized, you know, he's still getting paid off of that. And so I always wonder with him how contrived it all is, because it doesn't seem contrived. I don't have alarm bells going off.
I don't really think it is. I don't really and just from like a tiny glimpse behind the scenes I've been afforded, I really just think everybody's playing catch up. All the people who are like, this isn't really how things are supposed to work. And then there's like, okay. And you know, that's fun. That's good. All those people should be like woken up, right? Okay. Tom, on the self-titled, what's a song you do? I know you have some complicated thoughts about this. What's a song you do like on the self-titled? Let's start with that.
I mean, I Remember Everything. I think that's a great song.
Weirdly, I disagree with you, but let's listen to I Remember Everything. This is the Kacey Musgraves, Zach Bryan duet. Cold shoulder, closing time, you begged me to stay till the sun rose. Strange words come on out of a bone man's mouth when his mind's broke. Pictures in passing time, you only smile like that when you're drinking. I wish I didn't.
This podcast is supported by Reimagining Democracy for a Good Life, a podcast that asks, how do we build a radically inclusive, thriving, multiracial democracy? Longtime equity advocate Angela Glover Blackwell looks at movement, struggle, and progress in Los Angeles to see what it can teach the nation about building a democracy that represents everyone. Reimagining Democracy for a Good Life is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julie Turkowitz. I'm a reporter at the New York Times. I have been trying to understand changes in migration. So I traveled with photographer Federico Rios to the Darien Gap, this hot, mountainous, 70-mile stretch of jungle straddling the border of Colombia and Panama.
We're hiking through a river, just like covered in mud.
Many used to think that this route was impassable, but thousands have been risking their lives to pass through the Darien, almost all in the hopes of making it to the United States. We spent 9 days hiking through the gap and weeks building trust and relationships with migrants, with smugglers, with migration authorities to even be able to do this reporting. We interviewed hundreds of people who have made this journey to try and grasp what's making them go to these lengths to find a new life. New York Times journalists spend time in these places to help you understand what's really happening there. You can support this kind of journalism by subscribing to the New York Times.
It's a dude caught in his feelings, trying not to be caught in his feelings, and saying how screwed up he is and trying not to admit it too hard. And then the girl coming through and being like, yeah, no, you messed this up. Like, you did a bad job. And that always hits me. And it's like that song being out almost at the same time as the Rod Wave song, Boys Don't Cry. Is like, that's a real, that's nice. The white Rod
the
Wave.
The Zach
dude.
Bryan like, Rod Wave link up, though.
Let's go.
Bro.
Listen,
yo.
This is what I do.
Yo, Todd. Yo, Todd, if you're listening, set it up. Sorry.
When that happens, the accumulated like male tears, it's going to be like the tidal wave in Deep Impact.
Wow. It's inevitable.
It's going to be a wall of salty water coming at you.
All right. Let me ask a tough question. Their voices go together?
I don't think Zach Bryan's voice goes with anybody.
Nobody. That's fair. Noah Kahan, like, harmonies, it's charming in how bad it is, kind of. Like, all of his collaborations are fascinating because he's not a natural duet partner for anyone. Like, hearing Kim and Justin Vernon sing together, it's basically like hearing Justin Vernon putting on a hat that doesn't fit his head because he's, like, singing, like, everyday conversational stuff when he would rather be singing about like whatever poetic mumbo jumbo he writes in that I don't understand. He's like, yeah, I'm like getting up with some boys I used to know. That's how weird as hell coming out of Justin Vernon's mouth.
First of all, let's listen to the title track from the EP, Boys Fit. The thing that I was struck by this song was, and I think some of this is probably based off of what you're describing, Tom, and some of it just like the very nature of what Zach Bryan's voice does and Justin Vernon's technology does, which is that Justin Vernon sounded like he was like constantly playing catch up, like Zach Bryan of just like lay out a lyric and then Justin Vernon would be like, like just kind of like resolving, like Zach Bryan asked the question, Justin Vernon like resolving the question, but in like a slightly uncomfortable fashion. I didn't dislike that. I actually prefer that of these collaborations to the Noah Kahan collaboration. LME, what do you make of Zach Bryan's kind of aharmoniousness?
When you listen to the songs that are collaborations with the Lumineers joint, he all but kind of disappears, right? Like it's kind of just a Lumineers song with Zach Bryan singing a couple of lines on this.
Same thing with the Warren Treaty song.
Exactly right. He sort of, he is very gracious in that you hear him sort of say, you know what, I'm going to back away. Mike, you take the mic on this one. In a relatively moving part, you could almost imagine Zach Bryan just being like a fan of these people and being a fan of having written a song for them, but he gets to sort of guest on a little bit.
And also like it's also emphatically good politics, you know. It's like, again, like Zach Bryan trying to be like nowhere near like Nashville politics as it is, But making a choice, like knowing you're going to have a big record, making a choice and say, hey, this group that's like basically underserved by traditional Nashville. Yeah, I'm going to put you on this record and people are going to know who you are.
And there's something to be said about the fact that like these are actually like really great songs, right? And he's willing to be like, I'm going to back away from this because I do think that the Lumineers joint would have been better had it been just Zach singing that song. But, you know, the Lumineers like posted on their Instagram, I think, this DM from I don't know how many years ago of Zach sliding to their DMs, be like, yo, you guys are my favorite group of all time. Please jump on this joint with
bunch
me.
Bunch of narcs, first of all. Yeah. First of all, that's number one, bunch of narcs. Number two, you really out here following the Lumineers on Instagram? That's like
That's the thing. He's not a cool guy.
That's like you're doing this on your free time.
Wow.
I'm just saying with your free time, that's the thing you're doing.
Look, man, I follow the Lumineers and it paid off. And it paid off.
It's almost 9 p.m. East Coast time. I'm in my zone.
It paid off.
Prime time.
And here I am giving you the tea about the Lumineers being really excited about this DM from years ago. Years ago, this man.
Unbelievable.
But also, it does show his lineage, right? Like, he's not just about, you know, sort of the country iconography. He's also about this, like, the early 2010s sort of, you know, folk revival kind of
the Mumfordy stuff.
If there is a Marcus Mumford feature on the next record, I'm gonna really struggle.
Okay,
I'm gonna really struggle.
Are the Lumineers any different? Is that any different?
I think it's a little worse.
We're getting through this Lumineers thing. It's all right. Like, I'm making my peace with it.
It's a tiny bit worse. I will say, like, I did see Mumford and Sons perform. Maybe it was at the Barclay Center. Like, one of the most vexing concerts I've ever been to in my life. I would say the two shows that I covered in my many years of covering concerts where I felt like I was actively at philosophical war with everybody else in the building were Mumford and Sons and Jack Johnson.
Was the like bolo tie done up wrong? I could see that really hitting on your nerves.
Yeah, first of all, that man sweats. That man really sweats. We do have sort of a similar haircut, but like, they really, really delivered. Like, it was one of those things where I was like, you guys are doing the best version of the thing you're doing that I absolutely wish you would not do. And please don't ever do that.
It brings me no pleasure to report that Marcus Mumford dropped an album earlier this year, a solo album. And you know what? I know you're not checking for it, which is why I'm here to tell you this information. And some of it, not bad at all. I hate to bring this for you, you know?
And quiet. I need you to know, Elamine, that people are listening to this. You are going to be held accountable for this.
I know. They will hear me say, this is committed to history forever. I know. Come at me, bro. Let's go.
Unbelievable. Okay, Elamine, tell me on the self-titled, a song that really jumps out at you.
I find myself returning a lot to Smaller Acts, which is the song that's sort of closer to the end of the record. Here's the thing. It is an affect, but it is an affect that works on me, which is to say, like, the recording that ends up on the self-titled is a voice note. It's a voice note of Zach Bryan singing in a field. There's literally a bird that is, like, sometimes kind of yelling back with him.
The bird sounds like it is sitting on the microphone, like, directly on it.
Does it get publishing, though? Does it get publishing?
I said it should get a feature credit.
Definitely feature credit. And at the very end, you hear there's just like this little pop sound. And that pop sound, Zach later reports, is that someone set off a single firework in the distance. I think there's a reading of this as kind of like annoying. Like, man, just like put like go into the studio and record a clean version of this. But also, it works on me. Like, that is that kind of affect truly works on me because it lends to the credibility. It lends to the view of authenticity of, hey, I was out. I wrote this song. I had my phone with me. I started recording. He laughs at the bird yelling every once in a while, you know? But also, it is Zach at his best, which is to say, like, this is like a deeply beautiful song. He's kind of pushed his game lyrically to a different level. That song has a lot of really beautiful images. A lot of really just like singularly beautiful lines that I think make him the standout person that he is, a standout sort of singer-songwriter that he is.
Let's listen to a little bit of Smaller Acts featuring Bird DK.
She satisfied in the scorching summer like the trees and the stars she's laying under. They're fine being right where they are. Give her buzz and a
The thing that I think people have identified in Zach Bryan is a kind of emotional primacy. That is the thing that is being gravitated to far more. Like the fact that it's country adjacent, roots music adjacent. Like none of that feels germane. The thing that feels the most germane, and I remember when I saw him in Indianapolis when I was reporting that story, and prior to that, actually in Virginia, not far from Utah. Everything that is important about Zach Bryan happens in, and again, forgive, this is an audio only podcast, unlike Podcast Deluxe, tinyurl.com/podcastdeluxe. The muscles that are here on the sides of the eyes, like from the forehead to the sides of the eyes, and right here on the sides of the neck. Everything you need to know about Zach Bryan is in the tension in those muscles when he's presenting. That is the thing. He could be doing gospel records. He could be doing true country. He could be doing hip hop or R&B, whatever. Obviously, I wish he would not do hip hop records, but like he could be doing music of other forms. But the thing that I think people are connecting with is the tension in the muscles around the vessel of the music. I think there's something spiritual, dare I say, about it. And that to me, that's why it doesn't matter if he's giving a field recording of him and a bird in duet. As long as he's delivering it that same way, the song is just the vessel for that overall physical presentation.
I like his music. I think his music is good, but I think the sheer kind of like spectacle of the phenomenon, if you go see him and you see people sing along the way that they do, that to me is like striking and kind of amazing. Like when he played his first arena show here in Charlottesville in like May, he'd never headlined an arena before. It was the tour kickoff. And I was kind of just going to check it out. And I was the only one in that building who was going to check it out. Everybody else, it was a rapturous religious experience for, and it was, the crowd was young. A lot of Americana comes through town here, and the crowds are not young for a lot of it. The crowd was young. They were so excited and so into it. And it shook the rafters. Like it was incredible. The sheer reaction, like the visceral emotional connection that people feel to him is like, to me, that's better than the music.
I completely agree. But also he has a particular set of skills that he uses to translate that to the music, right? Like it's not like that aspect of,
yeah, it's not separate. It's a path to, it's not separate from. Yeah.
That's right. And also, you know, some of the tools he deploys, like my guy loves a mic clip. You know, if he like is singing a little louder than the levels allow for, that's his jam. He does that quite regularly. Yeah, I think he loves it when his guitar accidentally hits the microphone. You know, he's talked publicly about, you know, one of the things that he said is when they were recording the song Fear and Fridays, he was like, I made the band run a mile in the hot heat before we started recording. And I think you can hear that. And I don't even necessarily mean this is a good thing, because like everyone sounds like they're kind of furiously crashing into each other in a way. This album is like not mixed like it's like a beautiful album. It's mixed like you're overhearing your neighbor's jam session. But a lot of people gravitate to that because it's like, oh, this feels like I get to be around this, and it's a privilege to get to be around this.
Yeah, you almost feel like you're inside the record a little bit with the way that it is mixed. Like it's not precious. It's not walled off. It's atmospheric in the sense that it doesn't feel like above. It truly feels like it's like surround sound, but like not in the technologically advanced sense.
You know? Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
I mean, maybe look, I don't want to impugn the work of the mixing engineer on these albums. Like maybe they're doing incredible labor, but it does feel like the labor is being done. It's being done to kind of almost simplify the relationship between listener and album, to kind of allow you the room to walk into the album, literally walk into it. It's an unplugged album without being an unplugged album.
Yeah, there's nothing slick about the production. It's all just kind of like, here we are, and they're jamming right there without it being a live album.
It's the same with the musicianship and the vocals too. Like as a singer, he's like an extraordinary shouter. Like it's maybe that's why no other singer sounds good next to him, because he's wordy, you know, he's a great writer, just a user of words, but that he belts everything so hard And I think that's one of the reasons why it translates so well in an audience like that. And I think it's one of the reasons why, like, he's not going to be on like a Marshmello record, you know, like it's not, there's only so many like modes of music you could put this guy's voice into. I think, I hope, God.
There's a part in the new EP where he sings or he shouts and it's flat, right? Like he does not able to actually like hit the note, but he belts so hard that I'm like, I think he just blew out a vocal cord. And that's the take that he chooses to keep, right? He chooses to keep that because he's not hitting the note, but what he's doing is like, this is all of the emotion on the table. And that's what you can hear. Like, you actually have to like step away. Like, you know, first time that I heard it, I kind of like cocked my head back a little bit because I was like, that's way louder than I thought he would be. And he didn't hit the note, but of course, in Zach Bryan fashion, like that's the take that he chose to keep. I think that's in Pain, Sweet Pain.
And again, the sort of like lack of quote unquote perfection. Like, it's funny, like, I don't think of eras in the sort of classic, you know, Taylor, Beyonce, Rihanna sense. I think in an era, like, again, like Future's 4 mixtapes in a year or Zach Bryan putting out all this music at once, it's almost hard to, in my mind, look at the album as a standalone thing without taking into account, especially knowing there's an EP coming, knowing there's potentially other stuff. It does feel like the era of Zach Bryan that we're in, that feels like a cohesive or whatever thing, much more so than like this album captures the thing. Because I think the thing that I realize after the Summertime Blues EP, which to me is maybe my favorite, like purely like percentage of bangers, is to me the
Oklahoma highest. Smoke Show Stand Up. Let's go.
Let's just listen to it.
What a song.
I want to put on that dress that all the bad boys like. I know your daddy ain't home, so ride with me tonight. You always wind up here in a puddle of tears. And boys are out and they're angry and they're looking for blood in the back of a blue old pickup truck. You got nowhere to go, although you're all gussied up.
This year, a very important public figure turns 80. He sent us his wish for his birthday.
My wish is for everyone to practice wildfire safety, because only you can prevent wildfires.
That sounds easy enough. Bet you don't know who it is. Nah, of course you do. It's Smokey Bear. Let's all make sure Smokey's wish comes true by learning his wildfire prevention tips at SmokeyBear.com. Because Smokey Bear lives within us all. Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
How do y'all feel about this era, quote unquote, the self-titled and this EP, compared to the last era, which is, say, American Heartbreak and Summertime Blues?
I don't hear a big difference. There's tweaks, you know, there's things that he did on American Heartbreak that he's not doing on this. There's no like song making fun of Nashville in the stuff he put out this year.
Yes.
He's still operating on the same web. Like, he's still, you know, working with his touring band. The features are, that's a new thing, but that's like it's almost like a toy that he can play with now. I don't hear a vast difference in either style or quality. I don't see him operating in an era's mentality. I see him just like, oh, here's a thing I can do now. He's still working with the same musicians. He's producing himself now, but it seems like he just kind of learned how to do that and is excited to try it. It's not like Doja Cat getting a new haircut before putting the record out or whatever, like, or being like, this is scarred. This is my new persona.
Elamy, what about you? What do you make of this?
Zach Bryan as a producer, you sort of begin to see, like, with just the sheer volume of songs he's putting out, there are limitations to that approach. I think, like, if there was another producer involved, there's some repetition of ideas in songs, right? Like Summertime Clothes versus Ticking. I think they're sort of playing in the same wheelhouse. One is stronger than the other one. There's some repetition of melody lines, which I think if he was working with another producer and you would have like maybe caught that. You see like the idea of like Holy Roller is a song on the self-titled EP, but then Pain Sweet Pain, which ended up on the EP, it sort of also uses this idea of Holy Roller sort of lyrically. He's not immune to repeating himself, and I don't think he minds that too much, but I think if there was like another sort of external producer, maybe that would have been someone that tightened that up a little bit. And then there's also like, I think the expanding into slightly different sounds. Like I, for example, I hear, the first thing I thought of when I heard Long Island, Jake's Piano, is that what it's called? Is I was like, this is like a Dessner type beat. Like this is, you know, like this is a national song, right? Like,
yeah,
it has these movements that he sort of moves through. That's like, oh, I could hear this on a national record, or I could hear Dessner sort of being involved in this. I think he's very much experimenting or trying to figure out what modes he's most comfortable in, but also I think he's also simultaneously aware that the thing that makes him so magnetic to people is that he's willing to just put the experimentation in front of all of us. And like, that's what makes him attractive.
And that's why, like, to me, this particular wave with the collaborations and Elamine, to your point earlier about his willingness to kind of disappear inside these collaborations just a tiny bit, that to me, and that's why this, like, wave of music, this era, if that is a term, feels slightly different. Because I think on American Heartbreak and Summertime Blues, there is this kind of spiritual force of, I need to get this music out. Like, there's like a push. It's like, I'm pushing all of this out. Here, there's something like, I want to release this, but it's not totally about me. There are other narratives at play. There are other people in dialogue. Like, this acknowledges on a functional level that he is in dialogue with people. And on the first era, or really the second, if you're counting the independent records. But on that era, there was no dialogue. If anything, it was an absolute refusal to potentially acknowledge that anybody might mess with him or want to or desire to, or that he might ever go hat in hand to somebody and say, hey, would you do something with me? I don't want to say that this album and EP is a series of compromises. I think that's not as successful musically as the last album and EP wave. But I do think it's him trying to understand who he might fit in with, how he might fit in with, who's willing to kind of, like I said, coalition of the unwilling or whatever, who's willing to kind of play ball on his terms, but also he can kind of maybe like retreat just a tiny bit and not always be like the center of the forced center of the narrative. That's kind of how I read the difference between 2022 and 2023.
To that extent, there's like, he's sort of also beginning to assemble the Zach Bryan extended universe, right? Like, there are these people who keep popping up, like Charles Wesley Godwin, who has been on a bunch of records with him.
His longtime opener on tour.
That's right. Abigail and Jonathan Payton, who I think they also were opening for him in the last tour. But also he's pulling in people like the Warren Treaty. Like, those people are part of his universe. I think he's very aware that he's in conversation with people like Turnpike Troubadours, which he does name check.
Yeah, he shouts them out.
That's right.
Yeah.
He's in conversation with someone like Jason Isbell, and Jason Isbell and him are doing a bunch of shows together next year too. And so he's very much aware that he's a part of an ecosystem. So he's trying to expand carefully while also trying to preserve the magic of, I guess, like, I'm Zach Bryan. I'm at the center of all of this.
Do you feel like this is maybe going to be like an overly judgy question? How does Zach Bryan resist the NPRification of Zach Bryan? Because I know he wants to.
Does he want to?
I think so.
Do you feel that he does?
I feel that he does.
I think the way to do it is to just like keep cranking stuff out and talking the way he talks, you know, like the extent to which he like sings in vernacular, his language is not flowery. I think that'll keep a little bit of spikiness in there. And don't get any Desner's phone number. if he really is about that, then that's going to be a temptation.
If I see Zach Bryan in Ditmas Park, I'm pulling up on him. I'm pulling him in the car. We're driving him right back to Oklahoma. Like, you know what I mean? Like, no, I don't want to see you in Ditmas Park.
I will say, to me, I don't think it's actually a bad thing for him to expand his universe even that far, just to see what would happen. Because, like, I was trying to think about is like Chris Stapleton. Does Chris Stapleton suffer because he works with someone like Dave Cobb? And I don't think so. I think that partnership is very fruitful while also keeping the essence of Stapleton. But Stapleton does not do a lot of talking, right? Like, he lets the music do the talking.
And Stapleton doesn't fancy himself an outsider in any way. He's like the consummate insider. He just got a great beard and a great hat.
Right.
And a great voice. Look, and I don't mean that as a shot on Chris Stapleton. He's like one of my favorite singers, you know, he's like an incredibly talented singer. But I don't think what Chris Stapleton is trying to do is in resistance to the center of Nashville. If anything, it's very much holding hands with the center of Nashville. And I don't think if that's really where you aspire to live, I don't think you can be. The NPRification is built into that on some level. Whereas Zach Bryan, like I do think on a fundamental level, Zach Bryan does not wish to, in the same way that showing up to the CMAs or the ACMs is like a form of capitulation, showing up to Tiny Desk is probably a form of capitulation. I don't know if he's going to do it. I don't know if he wants to do it.
He won one.
He showed up to the ACMs. Nashville wants to cling, you know, like I feel like Nashville respects success and he is more successful than anybody right now. I'm curious to see whether he is interested in that at all. And if he is, how much. And that is probably the same with the NPR thing. It seems like he has enough of an individualistic streak, if not a rebellious streak, to keep doing the stuff that he likes to do to the exclusion of whatever forces try to rope him in. I think what's going to be really interesting to see is how many baby Zach Bryans come out. And like, because I don't think Oliver Anthony happens without Zach Bryan.
Absolutely doesn't. No, 100%.
And that was so weird and random. And so what's going to happen when there's more of that? What's that going to look like a year from now, 2 years from now?
In essence, what you're saying is that like an audience has been awakened, primed, ready for some, like now is kind of like, well, we need more, like, you know, like feed us. And then it just takes someone like Oliver Anthony to like get into the slipstream. And then it's like half of that audience is already there waiting for him.
Zach Bryan wasn't created in a vacuum. He's part of a lineage of people who've been extremely successful lately. Like he's within Jason Isbell, Tyler Childers, Sturgill Simpson, like he's operating on in the same tradition as all these guys and the same sort of like outsider, but not like snarling at the gates outsider thing. It's all part of what he's doing, but he's popped out so much harder than all those guys in such a compressed amount of time that makes it unpredictable. It's like it's destabilized the atmosphere.
I think we just generally have an innate detector of like nonsense and if somebody really means it or not. And, you know, like Sturgill's last couple of albums have been a complete departure from what we sort of know Sturgill for. But you listen to those records and go like, oh, I believe that this is like Sturgill's following his heart wherever he wants to go. And there's something sort of very affecting about that. And I think Zach Bryan is going to be the exact same way in the sense that I believe that he's going to do the thing that his heart desires most, not the thing that the machine desires most.
I will say this. The one moment that I thought genuinely could derail the Zach Bryan is in control of his own narrative was the arrest. And here's why. Not because being arrested is inherently a bad thing. Not because the thing that he did was a problem. You know, none of that. It's that for the first time, he had to reckon with external expectations of what Zach Bryan was supposed to be doing. Like, was Zach Bryan supposed to be anti-cop and say, and not be respectful and sort of be like, actually, I'm on the side of the left. And like, I think fundamentally you're overly aggressively policing and I don't believe in this mission. Or alternately, what's sort of closer to what happened, which is basically like, I respect cops. I respect the work you're doing. I am the asshole. I'm the bad person. I shouldn't have made your jobs hard. But I felt like it was the first time that I felt like he was confronted with a decision node that could have actual tangible consequences. And you almost couldn't pick both. You had to pick one. And he ended up landing on the side of law and order, which again,
he's a Navy guy.
Is what it
he's
is.
He's a Navy guy.
He's a Navy guy. Yeah, he's a Navy. Exactly. He's a Navy guy. But I did think that was the first moment where I thought people are going to see what he chooses and make a decision about can they show up to the show or listen to the record based on his decision of what he does there. And I wonder, how did the arrest strike you guys?
he looked great in the mugshot. Like his haircut was on point. He looked fantastic.
Incredible mugshot. Truly, like just like the mustache.
That was a mugshot. They must have like had a green light on him or something. That was like built to be made into an album cover. It is a beautiful piece of photography. I think there's a large audience that's experiencing Zach Bryan for the first time. And because of his success and being like, oh, there's an outlaw country guy who's super popular now. Like, let me check this out. And I think some of them were bummed out by it. But I think these are mostly people who have not been sticking with Zach Bryan and who don't know that he is like, was going to be a career military guy and inherently is like a respecter of authority. Like that's part of his deal.
The authority respecter.
And the way that he presented the apology, where he's like driving cross country to go to a football game with his dog, it kind of reminded me of like when he went on to announce that he'd broken up with his girlfriend. Like it's more the way a YouTuber does things than the way like a pop star does things.
Interesting.
It's like he has like that sort of like way of communicating with his fans that almost lets him out of that left-right binary.
Do you think that that's permanent also? Like, do you think that he will never be bound by that binary or never have to pick a side?
There's going to come a time where he says something that gets on somebody's nerves, I think.
Like, there was that Travis Tritt thing, the thing where he was, like, fighting with Travis Tritt about, I don't even remember what at this point, but then they, like, met up at a festival and they were like, we actually have more in common than we do.
What they had come to loggerheads about was trans rights. You cannot exist as a prominent person in society without ending up taking some stance on some things that might seem like the most common sense things in the world just because there's so many psychos out there. I think he's going to find himself in more situations like that. I'm curious to see how he reacts. I think he's done well so far in terms of like seeming like a human being who's not trying to hold himself up as a symbol for a thing.
Elamine, is part of the success of Zach Bryan in this part of public life, in essence, the same manner in which he's successful in his music, which is to say, it doesn't feel studied. It feels casual. It feels conversational. Even if he's doing a thing that maybe you might not agree with politically, or one might not agree with politically, the way in which he's doing it is very much say like, hey guys, I'm just figuring this out here. Like I'm walking the same weird gauntlet that y'all are walking. Is that sort of what's happening here?
You can literally hear him. You can literally hear him have this thought process as you watch the TMZ video. You're watching the TMZ video and he's in the cop car and he's negotiating with the officer. And part of it is like, he's a little bit angry that this keeps happening to him because it happened for the second time in 3 days or something. But part of it is also, he's like deeply apologetic for having this posture and stance. And he's like, okay, you shouldn't have arrested me. I was just a 27-year-old kid mouthing off. You should have known better. But also on the other hand, like, I'm really, really sorry. I should not have been mouthing off. There is a willingness to work through things in public with you that you see from Zach Bryan that is actually like quite endearing. Like I'm using the word endearing and talking about the arrest of a guy and his apology. And I think also, Tom, to your point about him sort of behaving like a YouTuber, he doesn't have to talk like he is the guy with the number one album in the country and the number one song in the country. He just has to talk like he's like, this is just to my followers and nobody else. And in a way, that kind of makes it personalizes it, but also makes it a bit smaller scale. I don't know if Zach Bryan knows he's Zach Bryan. I don't think he's kind of figured out, you know, the literal degree to which he has popped off in just like the last little while. And as he gets to know that, it will certainly change his calculus and change his posture publicly. And we will learn what that does in public. And I actually think that is a part of the appeal of the show, is like, we're watching this happen in real time.
We think a lot and talk a lot about context collapse, which is, you know, when a person who is used to behaving one way in one setting is all of a sudden yanked out of that setting against their intention and viewed through a different lens of values or philosophies or ideologies. like I said, to me, the arrest was like the first moment where that happened to Zach Bryan. I do agree he handled it like relatively well. Maybe the second one, if you include the Travis Tritt thing. But I do think that more of those are on the horizon. And I wonder if that will harden something in him and make him pick. I don't even mean this in the literal political sense. I just mean like doubling down on something ideologically. I wonder if he'll pick a side, or if it will make him be more like Justin Vernon, which is just like, actually, I'd like to be somewhere where I'm not asked these questions. I'd like to be somewhere where I very simply don't have to engage. I'm actually really reminded of, I was lucky enough to profile Justin Vernon kind of just before he really got huge, right? And the entire, I think it's the closing scene of that story. I spent a couple days with him in Wisconsin. If I'm remembering correctly, the entire closing scene of that story is me and him driving around Eau Claire, like him being like, you know, yeah, we used to like drink at this bar. Like we used to like whatever, like party at that house, da, da, da. And him being like, I don't want to learn any other city. And I almost don't want any other city to learn me. I just want to learn Eau Claire. Like, I just want to know even more about this place. That's where I'm good. There is something about Zach Bryan. Like, yes, he's moved to the big city, although it's Philadelphia. Sorry, Philadelphia. I'm going to get emails about this. Big love to all my friends from Philadelphia, but it's not the same as moving to New York, I will say, or Los Angeles. There is something where I'm like, does he just go back to Oklahoma? Does he just, and I don't mean retreat, like you're running away from something, but can he be truer to himself if he lives on those terms rather than perpetually throw himself in the theoretical line of fire of misunderstanding that happen when you fly very close to the sun? Is what's in his future a retreat, which is a crazy thing to say. We've known Zach Bryan for like 30 minutes, you know?
I would almost like the opposite. Like, I would like him to be sort of resolutely messy. Like, I want him to preserve
this at scale.
At scale. This exact philosophy that has gotten him to this place is, I think, the thing that makes the Zach Bryan sort of magic actually work. And so the idea of him is like, as he gets bigger and bigger, and by the way, like, my man went on Joe Rogan for 3 hours, didn't slip up once. You know what I mean? Like, the whole 3 hours. A lot of opportunities to slip up when you're talking that long and it's all being recorded. None of it happened. You know, none of it sort of happened. When I mean like picking a side or aligning yourself with a particular side. I think he can keep this spirit up, because I do think it seems to be integral to both his artistic approach, but also
who
just
he
like
is as a
his
person.
Way of celebrity. Yeah, exactly right.
The messiness is there in the songwriting. If it's there in the way he writes lyrics, he's writing about being a deeply imperfect person who's not sure about where he wants to be in the world. And I think that is absolutely what people draw to him. And I think the way to talk about Zach Bryan that's the most interesting to me personally is less about genre, like country, NPR, all that stuff. Although God knows I've brought up a lot of it, but like, it's like this, there's this whole, like, I saw him and Taylor Swift like 2 days apart, and the level of passion in the sing-alongs was vastly different audiences, very, very similar passion. And it's the same thing I see in Rod Wave. It's the same thing I see in like Olivia Rodrigo sometimes and in Noah Kahan. It's this like, there's this like generational need for like people to be singing their like heaviest, darkest feelings right now. I don't know what that is. I'm very curious about it. But it seems to be like it, like that more than any sort of like glamorous thing, any sort of like craftsmanship thing, anything about genre. Like, that seems to be what's working right now. Like, that's what's connecting. And it's this like very, very direct, let me grab you by the shoulders and like scream into your face. I have feelings that I gotta get off. And that's how he's operating in the world. Like, he's this like open, like nerve ending that's feeling things constantly and making people feel things constantly. It almost seems like the political landmines that he could step on. It almost seems like maybe he can avoid all these issues that he could face just by being who he is. There's this like wide open book, honest guy who's just trying to talk about his experience in the world.
I will say this before we go, when I did spend time with him, when we did talk about people who he was fascinated by in the public sphere, he did say the words Kanye West. And again, it's like, I don't want to read too much into that because Kanye West is also just like a famous person that a lot of other people think grew up on. But I do think part of what that reference was about was, this is a loaded way to put it, but like the courage to be oneself in public. Now, obviously, many things have happened with Kanye West since that interview that do not feel courageous. But I think, I think that's what he was. I'll send you an email. I think that is what he was referring to. All right, let's go out on that thought. Elamine, what's a Zach Bryan song to take us home? Why don't you kick someone in the head with a great Zach Bryan song on the way out?
I would hate for someone to not hear Zach Bryan with the little part where he's like, Michael Trotter, get it, you know, in the Hey Driver song. So I'm going to pick Hey Driver because God damn, that song goes Hey Driver.
That is our show. Thank you to Elamine. Thank you to Tom. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Every episode of Podcast Deluxe is on video. tinyurl.com/podcastdeluxe. Watch me and Joe go at it or not, depending on the subject.
I'm waiting for my invite, man. I wanted that third chair.
You want to show up? You're driving up. Snacks. You're pulling up on set, like Death Row, like Suge Knight standing outside the studio, like, yeah, yo. No. When I'm on camera, though. Subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content. That could be Apple, Spotify, YouTube, etc. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com. Any questions you got for mailbag episodes or just share your feelings? Because after an hour of listening to us talk about Zach Bryan, I can only hope that you have feelings about that. Get in the Discord, get in the Facebook. It's tinyurl.com/podcastdiscord/podcastfacebook. Our producer, as always, is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We will be back next week. Here is Hey Driver.
Hey Driver, you can drive me off. Anyway,
Michael Trotter,
yeah. Hey Driver, you can tell me off anyway.
So take me down a road that's a little bit windy to a place they still push you.